Aren't you that guy everybody hates?
Oh my, no.
This is Tall Can Audio. Follow along on Twitter at Tall Can Audio or at Facebook.com/Tall Can Audio.
Just do it!
What's going on, everybody? Matt Robinson here with you in the Tall Can Audio studios in Butte, the full by town, Canada. This is TCA number 704. Man, I hope you're all staying well, staying cool. Pretty cool guest for you here today. It is Eric Engels from Sportsnet. Most of you, especially those of you who are Habs fans, know him pretty well. Really excited that he's here today. We are on Twitter and Instagram at Tall Can Audio, Facebook.com/Tall Can Audio if you want to follow along and interact with us on social media. We would love it if you did that. And those are the places you can do it. In case you missed it, last week, Canada Day, July 4th, all kinds of crazy stuff going on, people on holidays, these sorts of things. Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet joined us on our Canada Day edition of the show. Had a really good time talking to him. That was TCA 701. Wherever you're listening to this, you can find that. Just scroll up or down a little bit. TCA 701. Wherever you are hearing this right now, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Pods, wherever you might be, make sure you have hit the subscribe button, that you've hit the follow button. We are going to keep the great guests coming from you. And we had a great time talking to Elliot Friedman on Canada Day. So make sure you go back and check that one out. Also, on the last show, TCA 703, we were joined by Michaela Schreider of That's What She Said on TSN 1200 and the Mouchoir podcast. It's just a fun word. She explained the origin of that title for her podcast on the episode, so make sure you go back. We had a lot of fun talking to Michaela. She was very much up on her Ottawa craft beers, very into the scene, so she fit right in here. It was really great to have her on the show. Lots of talk about the CFL, about Daniel Alfredson missing the Hall of Fame again, trying to get some more women into the Hockey Hall of Fame and who might be next in line in that regard. All sorts of Ottawa sports wounds were dug up as we also talked a little bit about what happened here with the NHL draft lottery. So lots of fun with Michaela Schreider. Hope you go back and check that one out. That one is TCA 703. Again, wherever you're hearing this, you can check out that one as well, or just visit tallcanaudio.com. You'll find everything you're looking for, including those subscribe links. Like I said, this one, Eric Engels of Sportsnet, covers the Habs as well as the NHL as a whole, but focused on the Habs based there in Montreal. Really excited that he took a little time to join us. Let's get to that right now. Pleased to welcome into the podcast from Sportsnet, Eric Engels. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Matt. How are you?
Can't complain. We seem to be inching our way back towards hockey, but things have been shut down for a little while now. What have you been keeping yourself busy with?
been on the health kick, on the health train. It's funny, you know, when we're in the grind of the season, and it's long and it's extensive, and it's as much a mental grind, or I should say more so a mental grind than it is a physical one. But the hours we keep they're tough, to
right,
say the least. I mean, you know, you're working, you know, day and night. You're not sleeping a lot. You're socializing quite a bit. You're working contacts, you're speaking to people. And even when you're not working, you're kind of thinking about work. So it's funny, you know, this pandemic hit and it kind of forced all of us, myself included, to institute a certain level of structure in our lives. And for me, a certain level of structure that is lacking in terms of how my job works, because I don't work a standard 9 to 5.
Oh, yeah.
So it's been interesting. You know, it's been, learned a lot about myself in this time and started working out regularly on the daily, and I haven't eaten a meal outside of my house really since this whole thing started. So just been that much healthier and feeling good and lost some weight, and
I think a few of us have gone in the opposite direction. That's one of the things that we normally do when people are passing through to lure them into the studio is we normally talk a little bit of craft beer on this show. So maybe this isn't a great time to ask if you've been disciplined, but is that normally your scene at all? Are you into the craft much? Or?
Yeah, I'm more of a vodka guy.
Okay.
I drink some beer here and there, and I do enjoy beer. I just can't drink too much of it because it bloats me. And in terms of it's not the best thing for my weight loss slash healthy program. So have been drinking too much since this whole thing started. In fact, like for the first 12 weeks, I don't think I had a single drink, wow. which is different. And I didn't do it like on purpose. It was no, I'm not going to drink for the next, you know, it just happened. Happened that way. So, it's been good. You know, I do love craft beer. I love beer, but it's not my go-to when I am having a few cocktails.
Yeah, I think for me, I think the biggest part of it was early on, everyone was getting really into these, you know, FaceTime happy hours or whatever. And I suddenly found myself having happy hour way more often than I normally do. Suddenly you're, yeah, all right. Like somebody calls you up and let's have one together. And suddenly it's, you know, 5 o'clock on a Tuesday and you're a couple beers deep. It's not, I don't think it's normal, man, but it happens. Well, right?
That's ironic because I think the reason you're probably doing it was to normalize things a little bit. So
that's part of it too, I guess. Yeah. So
it's all good. Everything in moderation and fun, and it's all good.
Sure. Could you tell us a little bit about your journey to where you are now at Sportsnet? Where did you get your start? What kind of made you decide this was the road that you wanted to go down, and just kind of your road?
Yeah, I don't want to be too long-winded about it, but I'll just say that, you know, I was like anybody else at 23, 24, wasn't entirely sure what they wanted to do with their life. You know, I went through university. I was never much of a great student. Whenever I applied myself, I did extremely well. But I didn't spend all that much time prior to university applying myself in any kind of way. I was really just enjoying my time playing tons of sports, hanging out with my friends and going to class and, you know, passing along with marks in the 70s and just trying to do as little work as possible. And then, you know, got to university and it wasn't like that. You know, you had to work hard to do well. And I wanted to commit to that and accomplish it. And I kind of built up my work ethic at that time. And it was a great experience for me. I graduated with a degree in political science from Concordia. And I came out, you know, doing some marketing jobs. And all throughout my life, people around me had been telling me, you know, with my depth of knowledge in hockey, that I should be involved in it in some capacity, whether it's as a broadcaster or writer or you know, just color commentating, doing something like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just started to look into some options in that department and ended up writing a blog and ended up leveraging the blog into some radio experience and then some television experience and got a press pass with the Canadians working for Sirius XM. And I was working with CTV Montreal and I was working with TSN 690 and I was hosting a radio show. All to say, I was, you know, the more the people showed some faith in my work and my abilities, the more I kind of leveraged those opportunities and created other ones. And, you know, in this whole time that I've been doing it for about 13 years, I don't think I've applied for any kind of standard job. I've just kind of seen where there's a couple of holes and called people up and said, hey, you know, I think there's an opportunity here and I could do some great work for you. And I know you don't have a job posting on this, but I think there's a window here to open up. And, you know, anybody who's kind of shown me faith, you know, I feel in climbing the way up, but that I've rewarded them. And it's been a great process. And 5 years ago started with Sportsnet. And I think, you know, it's just been kind of found my calling in life. This is what I think I was meant to do. And I'm doing it. It's been a lot of fun.
Have you found it? I mean, maybe it's an obvious question. Have you found it more difficult thing since things have shut down here a little bit? I mean, in one sense, there's a whole other kind of side of the business that it allows you to kind of take a look at in terms of what it might look like to get things back up and running. But at the same time, there hasn't been a hockey game played in like 3 months now. And what's that looked like for you?
Yeah, it's been incredibly challenging for a few reasons. You know, the first being that no sports are being played, and the second being that access, especially at the beginning of the pandemic, was extremely limited. I think most of the teams weren't sure what to say. I think they were concerned about what their players or the GMs or the coaches or anybody else might say without having enough information at their disposal in terms of where they were going or what they were doing. And, you know, that forced me to be quite resourceful. I was able to touch base with a lot of players on the Montreal Canadiens. And, you know, they were kind of specifically told, don't speak to anybody. And it just shows that I was able to build some really good relationships there over the years and was able to get, I think at the beginning of the pandemic, in the first few weeks, I did about 10 exclusive interviews with the Canadiens, which was, it was great. You know, it really confirmed to me that what I thought were really good relationships really were.
Right.
And, so that was the start. You know, we did some work around the ECHL and what was going on with those guys. And the more you start to dig and the more you start to, build momentum, so to speak, it makes things easier for you. That said, it's been a challenge. It's been a challenge being inspired to write about things as things have gone further along, but I'm not one to complain. You know, I love my job. It's a fun job, but write and talk about hockey for a living. And I'm very happy to have a job, period. So at the end of the day, we've all faced serious challenges with this. I'm very fortunate to have maintained my work throughout this time and done good work that I'm proud of and hope to continue. And hopefully the games will get played soon.
What do you think as we kind of move in this direction towards, I guess, what they're calling bubbles? They're not going to be completely sealed off, but largely sealed off. Do you have any sort of sense of optimism or pessimism as to how this might play out?
You know what? I'm more on the optimistic side, but I always have been. I'm not much of a pessimist. I believe there are great challenges to them being able to pull this off without a hitch. But I think that the level of planning that's gone into what they're going to do here, I think it's tremendous. And it's, you know, in a couple of regards. One, in terms of the detail, but two, in terms of the collaboration. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you look back at all the labor strife of, you know, since the year 2000 in the NHL, to see them come together and hammer out a new CBA or at least an extension of this one and with a couple of caveats coming in, to see them on the same page, to see them working together, and to see the level of detail that they have put into this document in the return to play model, it's impressive. And it tells you how important their business is to them. And it tells you that, you know, they're committed to coming back and coming back in the safest way possible. And unfortunately, without any guarantees. So we're going to have to just wait and see how things play out. But I'm optimistic that they're going to play out. And I'm optimistic that they should be able to execute what they're planning here.
Yeah, it's been interesting. You bring up the CBA and the collaboration and these sorts of things. They did already appear to be, you know, before the pandemic, on a more positive road than we have seen before previous CBA you know, apocalypses that the league has put itself through. They seem to be on the right road. They've almost been forced now to, with the damage that's been done to the league and the way the system has tied salaries and things like that to the revenues, you know, whether you wanted to work together or not, at this point, you know, you can't really move forward one without the other. So at this point, they're almost, you know, we're forced to get this done quicker than they probably wanted to.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I would say they were forced, and naturally they're tethered together as partners, but that hasn't stopped them in the past from warring with each other. True. I think the two things, you know, the main difference this time is that there was no systemic issue ripping them apart. In the over, the deal was quite friendly. That the last one that they signed in 2012 was quite friendly to both the owners and the players. It was, you know, much more in the frame of a partnership than it has been in the past. Mm-hmm. And I think both sides realize that they may have some things on either side that they don't like about the deal, but nothing that was ripping them apart. So they decided to come together. And I think it's that second thing that I'm getting to here is what's really relevant is that they decided to come together and make it a part of how they're going to return to play and tie it all together. And at a time where there are so many issues in the world and so many concerns that people have about their lives in general, I think the least appetizing thing would have been to see something go down like it did in baseball over the last couple months. So, you know, kudos to the NHL, the NHLPA, their leadership. Will everybody be happy with the deal that they're signing off on? Definitely not. But at the same time, you know, sometimes the art of a real good deal is where both sides get something they're satisfied with. You know, happiness is a bonus, but at least they can be satisfied with the work they've done on this.
What has your take been? I know you're active on social media. It seems like every couple of days now, these leagues come out with an update on this many guys out of this many tests have tested positive. And on the social media side, you see an awful lot of every time we see one of these updates, shut it down. It's unsafe. And I have time, honestly, I have time for people who say we shouldn't be doing this right now. I think that's a fair opinion, but I don't think anyone, including the NHL, is or should be surprised that until they get to the bubble, while these players are still in the general public, there were always going to be positive tests. Are the fact that we're seeing so many of those, are they, you know, do you feel similarly, or are they kind of weighing on you a little, or?
Well, what's so many? I mean, there's 35 out of 2,900 tests.
Yeah, they said I think it was about 6% we're at right now.
Well, that's out of the players, but 35 positive tests out of 2,900 conducted.
Yes.
It's closer to like 0.6%.
No, you're right. So, sorry. Yes.
You know, like, listen, I understand. I appreciate how everybody feels about this. And sports are not a necessity.
Right.
They're a luxury. Their entertainment, they're something that will bring back a sense of normalcy to all of us at a very difficult time where we're not feeling normal. I think the reaction of people that say, you know, this is a disaster when they see the positive test right now, I mean, that's, or the people or the other people that come out and say, there's no way they're going to be able to come back. Mm-hmm. I kind of laugh. It's almost like these people are not thinking this stuff through. You know, you're talking
on
about
Twitter.
Yeah, right. You know, without insulting anybody, we're talking about people that are being tested for the first time in 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't been subjected to testing before. Naturally, there are a number of people that are living asymptomatically with COVID. There's going to be a percentage of the NHL that has it or has contracted it or will contract it on their way to the hub city or had it beforehand and it's been dormant, whatever it is, they're being tested for the first time. So naturally some positives are going to come up. You want that to happen now.
For sure.
Let it be now. And once you have everybody secured and in their spot and have quarantined for however long it needs to be, if they've come up positive, then you're increasing the likelihood that in a month from now, or at the end of this month, I should say, when we get to teams move into their hub cities, that everyone's clean and ready to go.
A month or so ago, maybe a little bit longer than that now, there was, you know, some talk in the media and one or two players had maybe on the Habs specifically had suggested that given their place in the standings and the way things had gone, maybe they weren't super excited about returning to play. Now, the format has been released. The Habs are in. What do you think the sense around the team is now that it is going to happen? I even the players who said maybe they weren't super excited about it, I can't imagine they're going to show up and dog it or anything like that. But what do you get the sense you know, from the people you talk to around the Habs is with their role in this and the fact that they're going?
You know what? I think it's a mixed bag. I mean, I think public facing, they'll tell you they're very excited for an opportunity to play for a Stanley Cup, mm-hmm. one that's been gifted to them by the NHL. And, you know, behind closed doors, you know, there's a number of players, not just the Canadians, but just everywhere coming back that they're giving up their summer. They're probably giving up next summer. This is key, valuable family time. It's also, these are creatures of habit that are used to training a certain way. And it's not just day to day, but, you know, season to season and how they operate and what's normal for them. You know, we use the word unprecedented quite a bit. Obviously the players understand that this is a unique situation. But there's some players in certain categories that don't have a lot of incentive to be playing this summer. Whether they're players that are up for contracts next year and they're potentially concerned about damaging how that season will go down by playing this summer, to players that, are on expiring contracts that maybe are not going to be signing in the NHL next year, or maybe their NHL days are done, and that means that, you know, obviously there's a possibility that they're damaging opportunities to get contracts in other leagues by coming back this summer. Then you have players like from a team like Montreal who obviously appreciate this opportunity they're being given, but don't, you know, they know that it's a stretch that they're going to win the Stanley Cup.
Sure,
so,
yeah, they sold at the deadline, like a lot of teams. They weren't expecting this,
right? So they live in reality as much as they're supposed to suspend belief and try to do things that nobody thinks is possible. And I would expect that when the Montreal Canadiens all get together and when they all get back on the ice together in the coming week and start to work towards that aim of not only beating Pittsburgh, but going on a run and continuing and doing something that nobody would expect from them, that's a motivator. It's going to motivate them. And they're pros at the end of the day. They're hockey players. They're going to be doing what they love most. And, you know, if they make something special happen, I think, you know, that's something that they would relish. So you take all the negatives and push them aside, because at the end of the day, you're going to be playing. So I think, you know, once they're playing, they're going to play to win. And that's going to make for something exciting and compelling. But that's as much as I can speculate on those ideas, because until we start attending training camp in a week, which I expect that, you know, we will, some of us media members will be there. Mm-hmm. And until we start seeing, you know, what they look like and how they look and how they feel, and then we'll have a better idea of what it actually is.
Which one of them took your pandemic road and which ones took mine? Or is
that exactly.
It is interesting. Montreal, of course, you know, maybe the hottest market in the NHL when it comes to media, when it comes to attention from the fans. What do you think of the mood around the market, maybe outside of the team? Are they excited to be seeing some summer hockey and that the Habs are involved? Would they rather be throwing their hat into the Lafreniere ring? What is the mood of the market from what you've been able to tell?
There's no doubt they'd rather have that 1-in-8 chance of getting the number one overall pick. But I'm pretty sure they're going to be very excited to watch some hockey.
And
I think much like maybe the executives on the Canadiens, they'd like to see Montreal give Pittsburgh everything they can handle. And then lose in triple overtime a game five on a fluky goal that Carey Price couldn't stop because it hit three bodies in front of him. Right? You get a scenario where you get the young players of the team some experience and you still have a chance to draft first overall, and worst case scenario, you're drafting ninth. I think that's what the Canadiens executives would be more interested in seeing, and I think the fans are on the same page. Now, I say that, I don't want people to think that the executives don't want to see the team win.
Right.
If the team goes on an extensive streak here and not just beyond the play-in round, but they're able to really make it far into the playoffs, of course, management and everybody involved would be very excited about that, and it would mean good things for all their developing players in the organization, and also some of the guys that are just entering their primes. They're going to be key factors in this team moving forward, whether it's a guy like Max Domi or Jonathan Drouin or Brendan Gallagher, or, you know, you name it. They have a number of players that are between the ages of 24 and 28 years old. So, you know, I don't think any manager is ever going to tell you that it's bad for your team to get playoff experience, especially if that experience is winning experience.
Last one for you then. We've debated around here a few times what we're about to see in terms of who might have the advantage in terms of a team that is very systematic and, you know, defensive, and the one that jumps to mind for me would be Toronto Columbus. The guys find their hands, and the run and gun skill team will find it first, or does the skill take longer to come back around and round back into form? And if you're a good systematic shutdown team like that, that you'll be able to put that back in place first. What do you expect to see kind of in these play-in rounds in terms of who finds it first and what type of team might have the advantage?
Well, I think you look at teams that are tightly knit, and not just in a cliche, but like they really, there's evidence that they have a close bond and there's something good going on there. That's one advantage. I think their cohesiveness and their adherence to the systems that are put in front of, you know, in place by their coaches is a huge factor. How the games are going to get called is probably the biggest factor of all here. Like, you know, we're used to playoffs where the whistles go away. With the fans not being in the building, maybe a lot more of the stuff that goes on the ice away from the puck becomes audible, to the point where the officials are able to call more things that they otherwise wouldn't notice. You know, we see at the beginning of every season that officiating is pretty hard line. Are officials going to treat the beginning of this return to play model, because it's more like a beginning of a season than it is anything else? I mean, we are going into training camp here.
Sure, yeah.
Are they going to treat it that way? Because if they do, it changes a lot for certain teams in this tournament. I think of a team like Toronto, for example. If they are in a game model where there's more power plays than normal in the playoffs and more stuff gets called, it's not just the benefit of having more power plays. It's the benefit of being able to play the style that they play.
Yep.
Without feeling as though they're going to get mugged and nothing's going to come of it. So it's, you know, that could be a huge advantage for a team like that. A team like Colorado, that could be a huge advantage for them with the speed they have and the offensive style they have. Tampa Bay, same thing. So how the game gets called, I think, is a big factor. Otherwise, you have some teams that are really, like, built to win, built to play playoff-style hockey. And I look at St. Louis – they have that. Boston has that. Yep. Dallas has that. It's going to be interesting. I think it's going to be exceptional to chronicle this experience. And I'm expecting that I'll be there for a little bit of it, at the very least. So I'm not just going to be focused when I'm writing on it on what's going on the ice, but how the players are feeling about this unique experience and how their lives are being affected and how they're living them. And what I think it's been so easy to focus on the potential negative aspects of being in the bubble. It's amazing that nobody's really talking about how cool it might be, like how great it might be for all these guys to be together. And like I kind of picture it kind of like summer camp. So I'm eager as anybody else is to see what it's going to be like. And I look forward to writing about it and talking about it and doing my job again in a way that I've become more accustomed to, certainly.
I know I said that was going to be the last one there. You brought something up. If you got a second, I would just like to ask, have you been given any kind of, you know, you work for Sportsnet, they're the national rights holder. Do you expect, you know, you say you might be there for some of it. Would that be that certain media members, you know, have you been given instructions that you might be quarantined in the bubble, or if not, you know, you would go to the building but have to, you know, stay upstairs in the press box? Do you have any idea yet what that might look like?
Yeah, I don't have anything official. You know, we're waiting for kind of how this is going to play out. I think some negotiations have happened, certainly, regarding media policy. But until we know for sure, I won't say much else other than I think, you know, there is a possibility that some of us will be at games and practices, hopefully. But I don't, until I know for sure, can't really say.
Right.
All I know is that we're thinking about it, we're planning, and we're hopeful. But until we know for sure, I wish I could say more about it. I just don't know.
I sent Eric a message today to ask if he had time to come on. He responded right away and said he had time straight away this afternoon. So, very cool of you. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you making a little time for us, and, maybe we can do this again down the road.
It's fun, Matt. We could do it anytime, and you're great.
So that was fun. Eric Engels of Sportsnet, was really glad he made a little time. Like I said there at the end, just one of those really cool guys that willing to make a little time for you. Sent him a message on Twitter. I don't even know, maybe 12:30. He responded within an hour and said, when do you want to go? And he said, I got time this afternoon. So fired it up, honestly, a little quicker than I expected that we would. But man, when somebody says they're going to make a little time for you, you jump on it. And so it was really cool of him to do that. You can follow his work at sportsnet.ca. We will, of course, have his Twitter information on our social media feeds, at Tall Can Audio on Twitter. We'll put it out there if you want to find it. Really interesting what he was hinting at there. Obviously nothing carved in stone yet, but I will be fascinated to see which media members, if any, are allowed to get into the bubble and what that might look like. And if they are going to let some in, Eric is one of Sportsnet's top writers. He certainly would be on the short list of guys that might go and do that. So that will be interesting to keep an eye on as we move towards these bubbles, these hubs, I guess we're calling them. We will wrap this one up. Like I said, we're on Twitter and Instagram at TallCanAudio, Facebook.com/TallCanAudio. Hope you'll take a second wherever you're listening to this. If you enjoyed the show, hit subscribe, hit follow, and maybe even take a second, leave a rating and a review. This has been TCA number 704. My name's Matt Robinson. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you all on the next one.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
Thanks for listening. You can get more TCA at TallCanAudio.com or by searching Tall Can Audio on your favorite podcast app.